Welcome to Movie Banter! I'm Paul Carenza! I sound a little bit special.
He's trailing off slightly already. It's been a long morning.
It has. I'm Paul Carenza, hello.
I'm John Sands, hello.
And I'm Jennifer Masters, hello!
That sounds patronising.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In case you're wondering, there isn't a puppy in the studio. That's just what Jen's sweet sounds like.
Jen treats the audience at home like a puppy. Not allowed on the sofa. Welcome to the podcast. This is a film review show by three UK British, just in case you're not sure what UK means.
We could just say British then.
British film fans, and we like films, and so we could talk about it.
True, that's about it, really. We have a relatively wide range of tastes.
Mm-hmm. I think
fairly
so.
Eclectic. I have a soft spot for action films, but we'll go and see anything. But also romantic comedies. It's a weird balance. Yeah. As in, I went to see Transformers 2 and liked it, but felt bad about it.
So would you like to see, if you saw a romantic comedy that you expecting to be a romantic comedy all the way through, and then halfway through suddenly became an action film, and
the heroine
died, and there was a big car crash, and then suddenly there's a race on, you'd like that, wouldn't
you? That's almost my idea of my favourite film ever.
That could work, couldn't it?
It's kind of like From Dusk Till Dawn, but with action and romantic
The rest of the audience would walk out going, I saw a romantic comedy.
Exactly, I've been duped.
And the action lot would stay away anyway, but you'd be there loving it.
I'd be asking them to bring me back more popcorn.
Yeah, fair enough. So, that's what John likes. Jen, what do you like?
I'm the token girl, so...
You like Bambi and slippers. Slippers? That's not film.
Slippers.
Sorry. Just things that she likes.
Fluffy slippers, exactly.
Bambi was the first film I ever saw in the cinema. I was four, and it wasn't really my choice, but I remember enjoying it.
Did you laugh when her mother got shot?
Yes. No, I did not.
But you laugh now, that's good to know.
Establish where your levels are.
Yeah, no, I'm a girl, but I, as an example, I absolutely hated House Bunny. I am not part of that genre of female, and I love Cloverfield.
I don't know if that many women are.
Oh,
so are you trying to say
you like Cloverfield?
You're trying to say you're not a very womanly woman, is that what you're trying to say?
I say I appreciate lots, you know, but
no, you're a
don't
womanly
put me
woman,
in a box,
but you're not,
you know?
You're not a girly woman.
Don't put you in a box. You don't like boxing Helena.
I enjoy, you know, like period dramas and stuff like that, you know, like, oh, for God's sake, John.
What?
Look,
I don't know what you mean.
I may have just smirked at the idea of a period drama.
I like things like Becoming Jane. I'm going to just talk over you. Oh, for God's sake. Right.
Sorry.
Yes. If you're new to the podcast, this is just how we treat Jen, because she's the token girl and we are two men, and therefore the odds are in our favour.
If you're new to the podcast, this is just how we treat women. I think.
No.
We have a dark sense of humour sometimes.
Well, yes, it is true. It's our Britishness.
It is.
How we
it
look.
Is.
Yeah.
It is.
All
it
Brits
is.
Have a dark sense of humour.
It is. It's what makes us British.
Ah, oh, very true.
It's what made this country British.
And you, Paul? I like
films.
Well done.
There you go.
Yeah.
I often go for the slightly artier film. I often feel I should be slightly... You know, I went to see Broken Embraces not too long ago.
Oh, that's true.
Only, to be honest.
That's all in foreign, isn't it?
It is in Spanish. I suppose it's only because every other film had just started and I had 2 hours to kill. But, you know, I do like the more hybrid. Transformers, I couldn't even be bothered to see, put it that way. Action films I generally stay away from. Like the dramas, like the comedies. Don't want a bit of horror. I know you're not.
Yeah, I'm not really a horror.
I think between us, we've probably got all the genres.
I think
we've
got all bases covered with a lot of overlap.
Yeah,
but with a few branchings
exactly.
off as well.
So whatever films you like, there's probably, you know, you've probably got a friend here anyway.
Yes.
And that's who we are. And this week we're going to be talking about Dorian Gray, which was in the cinemas this week.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Adventureland as well, which is also out.
Which is out this weekend.
And then our regular features as well.
Yes, we've got this week in movie history, which is where we take a look at the fictional timeline of cinema.
Exactly.
And everything that happens on certain dates. And Paul runs through them and Jen and I have to guess
exactly.
what film it
Ooh.
Is.
Yeah.
Exciting. Can you feel the tension building? Me neither. But we'll do it anyway. We've also got a guest comedian who will try and fit in this week.
Yes, there'll be room, I'm sure.
And that is Mr. Paul B. Edwards. So thank you, sir, for your film thoughts, and we'll have those shortly.
We've also got DVD reviews.
Indeed.
To throw out some, which is just various films we've watched on DVD over the week. I watched all three Ocean's 11, 12, 13 films.
In a row?
No, 12 and 13 in a row. Okay. That was last night. Because 12 was on TV, and then I thought, I'll dig out the DVD.
Yeah,
I was still up working, so I thought, why not?
Fair point.
And also Brassed Off and Daywatch.
And Desert Island Flicks is our regular feature, where we pick a start of movie and pick our favourites of it. And we'll end the show on that. As usual, this week, I think it's got to be...
It has to be.
Patrick Swayze.
Yes,
really.
Yeah. R.I.P. Patrick Swayze. It's sorely missed.
So we will be discussing his best films as we close the show this week. So that's what we'll do. That's our agenda, and we're going to stick to it, damn it.
or more likely, get slightly distracted and go off on film-related waffling tangents.
Exactly. So that's long enough for the podcast this week. Do tune in again next week. We'll try and get some of those things. So let's before we get on to Dorian Gray, which is the pretty big release of the week over here at least, should we do in this week in movie history?
I think we should.
Yay!
Woohoo! Let's do a little swap round.
This is Jen's favourite moment.
Come on!
I don't know why, because she always loses.
I know, but this time I might win.
Okay. In this week of history, here's the date and the event. You tell us the film. And I've changed this way. I've made it a bit more difficult.
I've been
through it. Because you've never won one yet, have you, Jenna? I've taken out some of the references to the film title, which are in the blurb. Because sometimes I don't do that.
Yes, because sometimes it's Armageddon is narrowly avoided.
Exactly,
right?
Marty McFly goes back to the future. What was the film? No, exactly. So this week, a little bit more difficult. So, September the 19th, 1978. A spaceship explodes on re-entry, meaning the astronauts pretending to be inside while actually in a studio several miles away suddenly become targets.
Oh, you know what film that is.
Jen doesn't as much.
No.
Give her a moment. It's Capricorn 1.
Capricorn 1.
That's a brilliant
film. Indeed.
No idea. Sorry.
Had O.J. Simpson in it before he murdered someone.
Or didn't.
I was going to say, can you say that?
Before he murdered someone, according to his book he wrote called If I Did It.
Well, yeah, but he said if.
What?
I mean,
I know.
I think we might need to record that for allegedly for legal purposes.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. No, I'd say that's legally accurate. He was made before he murdered someone, and he has still not murdered someone.
He might in the future.
I'm recording this podcast before I've murdered someone.
That does imply you're about to.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't like standing this close.
I think legally we're covered.
Okay, fair enough.
Well.
Fair enough. OJ, if you're listening, please don't murder us.
Yeah, see, that's not helping.
Well, I just say please.
I'm not with these guys.
September the 20th. 2468. Who do we appreciate? Oh, that's the year. 2468. 2468 motorway. Malcolm Reynolds, captain of a spaceship, is born. Now, in what film was there a captain of a spaceship called Malcolm Reynolds?
That's going to be... No, I know, but Serenity.
Serenity, indeed, correct.
No
well
idea.
Done.
Mal, that was just... The name just triggered. Played by Nathan Fillion, who is a comedy genius.
He is. Mm. And,
he won an
star
Emmy.
Of many cancelled TV shows.
Well, yeah.
September 20th, 1942. At the height of Nazi power in Europe, I'm going to get the name wrong, but Vasilij Zaytsev, a young shepherd boy, thank you, arrives from the Urals to fight for Stalin. What was the film?
I'm going to go with the only Russian World War II film I can think of, which is Enemy at the Gate, which is what I was talking
about. It was indeed. It was mentioned only last week on this podcast by you as your favourite modern World War II film.
Yes.
Indeed. 1975, September 21st, a man receives a letter from Apple Computers amid his shrimping attempts. Forrest Gump it was, well done. Was it the shrimping that did it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the clue, well done.
Go on.
Okay, last two, here we go. So you can still nearly win. Okay, 1945, September 22nd. A general tells reporters that he does not see the need for this denazification thing and compares the controversy over Nazism to a Democratic and Republican election fight. So this is a war general, 1945, who made a comment at the end of the Second World War about them things. But who was he? Famous general. Had a film named after him.
Well, in which case, I'm going to go with Patton.
Patton.
Really?
That's the fella.
Okay.
Patton.
I don't remember him saying that at all.
There you are. He did
Patton,
say that.
That's a stunningly good film, though.
I've never seen Patton.
Really? I've never seen Patton.
Have you really? Sling it your way. Have to do that. That's a good one. George C. Scott.
Yes.
And lastly for this week, one for you, Jen. One for you. Okay, you can do it.
The pressure's on.
You
now.
Can do it. The pressure is indeed on. 1976, September 23rd. A plant threatens the human race by feeding on human blood, but the owner of the plant blows it up.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors. Yay! Well done. There you go. That's from the intro. It says, in the early year, not be long before our own, in the month of September. And there you can work out the date from that.
Yeah.
I did my maths. So there you go. That was In This Week in Movie History.
Yay!
Well done, everybody. You all won.
Oh, I didn't.
No, you didn't win. But we'll pretend
you won. It's not about the winning. It's about taking part.
Yeah.
In your case. So
speaking of historical... films. Dorian Gray.
Period pieces. Yes. Sort of.
Yeah.
Dorian Gray. Tell us about Dorian Gray.
It would be a better film if they stuck to the original plot.
Ooh. True. Well, which they mostly... This is an Oscar Wilde book all about the
basic... It's his only book, isn't it? It's his only novel.
Is it his only novel?
Yeah,
really?
He did Plays Puff, isn't it?
But the basic premise is it's sort of a young, good-looking bloke turns up in London and is the talk of town.
He's innocent and sweet.
Yes, has just inherited his father's estate. And then makes a deal, all kind of through... It is almost sort of accidental, but essentially ends up... someone paints a picture of him, and a deal is struck almost...
An arrangement happens.
Yes, whereby all the effects of his life, including age and injury and vice, will be inflicted upon this portrait, while he remains completely undamaged. And so we see... I mean, the film covers probably 30 years?
Yeah.
25 years? Which is longer than I think the book does. And over the course of it, he gets more and more corrupt, dives into more and more deviant behaviour, including, but not limited to, murder.
Nice.
And the toll it takes on the picture, and him, because of his soul is still affected, but his outward appearance isn't.
Yes. I've actually got this has been made into film before.
Yes.
Many times. And I've actually got a copy of the 1914 version.
Oh, really?
Which, as on TV, it looks immaculate. You would not know it's aged single day. The DVD box cover, though, oh, he's ugly on that now. He's ugly.
Oh, dear. No.
That's my only comment on this film. I haven't seen it. Over to you.
Well done. No, but as a film overall, it's quite involving, I think. Because it is an interesting story, but the film, it deviates from the book slightly in his early relationships, and also the book covers a much shorter period of time, so aging isn't so much a factor, and it's slightly more just, you know, his vices that are reflected in the painting. But the lead role is played by Ben Barnes, and of Chronicles of Narnia fame from a year or two ago.
And Easy Virtue,
yes.
Which has also got Colin Firth in it.
Who's in this?
Who's the best thing?
Yeah,
in
Colin
this
Firth
film.
Is brilliant in this. He plays his older mentor, you know, takes him and says, "Hello, young boy, come with me." Yeah. Well, that sounds slightly creepier.
That's gone slightly wrong.
No, but he's going to the experienced socialite, yes, who says, "Oh, why did you come to the opium den? Why not try having sex with a whore?" And it's just, it's all kind of pushes him in those directions.
It sounds like an episode of, there's an improvised radio show called The Masterson Inheritance.
Yes.
Radio 4 years ago, who did a very similar thing with that.
Yeah, it is quite
classically,
similar.
Quite up for parody in a way. But,
yes.
But it's
played straight, but it does work as straight. Mm. But Colin Firth is very good, being the slightly distant socialite.
I've heard interviews with him, actually, sort of promoting the film, where he said he's really loved doing this role, and he now knows... This is sort of the first role he's done where he's played an older person, and he sort of now knows that he's growing up in that way and loving it. He said that he's been waiting for far too long. Going, yeah, romantic lead, yada yada, but he wants to be doing this.
He does do it very well, because he was a similar role in Easy Virtue, actually, playing the slightly separate from everyone else, just throwing incisive commentary and witticisms out into it. And he's extremely good. But Ben Barnes as the lead, he's not bad. But he's not really worthy of the lead either.
The fact is that the whole point of this film evolves around Ben Barnes being pretty.
Yeah, right.
That's true. Is what it is.
He's quite pretty.
But the whole deviance and the life that he's meant to lead, I just don't think it's actually convincing enough. He's very good when he's got something to work with, but the script takes a lot of time to warm up. At the beginning, not really very much sort of happens, and the episodes of emotion that he portrays are good, but then they just slip into nothing again, and we get lost into a setup to something that's very late in arriving, I'd say.
And then actually he warms up a bit later on, as he gets slightly more cold-hearted and distant. I thought he was more believable as that.
Right.
But then he starts going through the sort of angst of what's going on.
Is it a long film, though? It sounds like...
Not really. I wasn't really paying attention, which is probably quite telling.
Does it feel like it? Whether it's, you know, actually...
No, I don't think so. I mean, it drags a little bit, but no, it's not. It's not a particularly long-winded affair.
I think also because we, as the viewer, we are led to believe that this painting's obviously pretty horrific by, you know, the later stages of the film. And when we actually see it, it kind of annoyed me because, it does scare you, but it scares you in that kind of theme park ride sense of fear. All of a sudden, it moves, and you know, you jump. What did you say that the painting reminded you of?
towards the end. Well, because in the older versions, largely because of effects-based reasons, I think, the painting just gets more disfigured, and that's it. In this, the painting's slightly more interactive in that you'll occasionally see sort of flickers flash across it, or it'll move. Towards the end, it goes completely that way and starts not quite lunging out of the frame, but it's definitely stretching within it. And all I could think of was Viggo the Carpathian from Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
Right.
You just remember the main bad guy who's trapped in the painting in Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
Just him. And towards the end, he's sort of lunging out.
Yeah.
And it was just like that. And
it
so I couldn't really take it seriously.
I thought you were going to say the painting that Phoebe from Friends has got.
Oh, so
the three-dimensional arm coming out, and he's Gladys. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, that would actually probably be more scary.
Maybe a little, because it just seems to resort, because it's very low and tense the whole way through. Mm. But then occasionally, it suddenly just resorts to throwing a jump scare because
it doesn't quite
fit.
I think they kind of need to because it's not quite tense enough.
Yeah.
I mean,
but it was a relatively entertaining watch.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing. It's a very criticisable film, and yet I did come away saying I enjoyed it, but there's all these things to say about it.
I think the most famous drawing right up till now, I think, which is from the 40s, I think, was black and white, except the painting was colour.
Oh, really?
And so that's the way they made that jump out at you in a way. And from I've heard a couple of reviewers who've seen the film, that version, saying that they preferred that.
Yeah.
Just the way they handled the picture. Because when you get CGI involved...
It does.
Not quite as.
It doesn't quite fit. Yeah. The way the painting behaves doesn't quite fit with the tone of the film. But I'd say it's worth a rental, but probably not rush out to the cinema to see it.
It's also got Rebecca Hall in it, who.
She's good, I like her.
Yeah, but I think she's kind of like this intelligent, interesting girl, but she's sort of wasted in this role.
What, as drunk throughout?
Not quite. Not quite. It's just that the part could have been played by some other unknown pretty girl, because it's just that kind of token female that he has to fall
in love.
She's
the one from Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And also Start of Ten. Yes. Yeah.
Mm. But I don't know. Could do better. I mean, I don't really want to criticise Ben Barnes' performance, but there's just some bits that he's better at than others, and I don't think he's quite got the maturity to pull off all that.
I wouldn't say horrendously miscast, but I think he was miscast. I think they could have found someone better.
I've yet to see. I mean, Prince Caspian, I didn't really rate as much of a film, really.
Yeah,
that was more about other things, though.
Well, true, but it does mean I've yet to see him in a film where you go, "Wow!" I think, because I think particularly for newer actors, there's a tendency. I mean, he's clearly gone straight in there with your Prince Caspians and something like this, which, you know, the big studio releases.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas often for newer actors, it's quite nice if you see him work away up in a bit of the independence and some dramas.
I think he has done a couple, but I don't know what they are off the top of my head.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think at the moment his prettiness is outweighing his actual ability.
Exactly, yeah. He almost needs to be a bit uglier and then he'd probably do better as an actor.
He'd have to work harder.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
I think he just maybe needs to trust that he can be a bit more... I don't know, a bit darker. I think it just needs a bit more weight, and I think I probably would have liked to have seen him do this film in a couple of years. That, I think, would have been better.
Yeah.
It just needs a bit of tweaking, I think.
Well,
a bit of maturing, like a fine wine.
I'll be seeing it this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I wouldn't dissuade people from seeing it as such, but just going aware that it's flawed.
But I like to see films as well where... I hate to say it, but... that I can sort of say, oh, yes, I've seen another Oscar Wilde thing now. I now know we'll have the benefit of that experience.
Yes.
Of saying I've seen a cultural thing.
I can't claim to have read the book more than that. I feel I started it once ages ago and then didn't finish it. But it's probably far too long and had words in it.
Yes.
but while it does deviate from the story, because I looked up the summary on Wikipedia, because that's how you read things. I feel bad. I read a lot, just not that Oscar Wilde.
Wikipedia is the new York Notes.
Or the crib sheet.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
But I feel there are aspects of the original story which they would have been better off if they'd used them in the film rather than changing them. But the broad story is still pretty much the same. So for anyone who does know the book, you probably won't feel too hard done by if you go to see the film.
I would really like to go and read the book now, because you're left with a few questions afterwards, like, what happens to his soul? You know, how does the character actually feel? Because it's not quite portrayed clearly enough for us to understand it.
Yeah.
So I'd, you know, see it and then read the book.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's about wraps up Dorian Gray, really.
I look forward to seeing it. Anon. We've had some emails from you. If you'd like to send us emails, if you've seen Dorian Gray or have comments about anything we talk about or don't talk about, you can email us podcast@moviebanter.co.uk. As these people did.
Hey. Nice link.
Yeah, thanks. We had an email from Jed. Jed says, hello, everyone.
Hello, Jed.
So that's not just us. That's you too, the listener, as well. You too. You are everyone. Jed says that I enjoyed the latest episode, as always. I'm a little disappointed to hear that Julia is disposable. Did I say that? I must have done.
Oh, I can't remember.
I'm the only one who reviewed it last week. But he says...
Jed probably listens a lot more closely than
we do. Well, sure. He says, I was hoping it'd be pretty good stuff. What with the amazing Meryl Streep and the pretty good Amy Adams, who I think is vastly becoming from pretty good to nearly amazing. I like Amy Adams.
Yeah, I think she's got a lot of
very, very watchable.
I mean, I don't think this necessarily demonstrates, you know, the most her range has to give. I saw Julia last night, which we reviewed in last week's episode.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you guys think, then? You've seen this now.
I did enjoy it. I thought it was a very... Yeah, I was going to say enjoyable romp, but it's not really a romp.
No.
Mm. I mean, it is a disposable.
Enjoyable fare, isn't it?
Yeah. I think disposable is probably a fair description, but does sound more negative than it is.
Yeah.
In that, because it's not... It doesn't have any real even plot or message as such, but it's an interesting tale to watch unfold.
Yes.
And the stories of these two women and how the lives take and overlap.
Yeah.
So it is an entertaining watch, but... Yeah, I didn't go away carrying great weight from it. And
no, well, part of the problem for us is that, like I said last week, we don't know who Julia Child. That's right. Julia Child is the Meryl Streep character.
Yes.
Yes.
Super Toys emailed in and said that Julia Child is very well known here in the United States. You'd be hard pressed to find someone who doesn't know who she is. Well, so for them, it's more of a biopic of someone they're familiar with. For us, we approach it from a slightly different angle.
Yes. But at least we can sort of appreciate she's clearly well known and tells her story. But we're not as invested in it.
But the fact that, because it is, does seem like quite a caricature, having not known what Julia Child actually sounds like, it does sound like a sort of slightly hokey impression. She sounds drunk the whole time.
I went home last night and watched a couple of clips of her on YouTube, and she does, I think Meryl Streep, she does overplay it slightly.
Mm.
But the real Julia Child does have that slightly drunk sounding voice.
Yes.
But I think Meryl Streep played it up a little bit. But maybe not that much.
Well, the thing we liken it to here, and if you're not from the UK, you won't be familiar with this, but get on YouTube and have a look. Delia Smith is a British... the British Julia Child, really.
Yes.
Nigella
Lawson gets referred to, though.
Oh, she does. Yeah. That's right. So you may have heard of Delia Smith, and she was really a staple. Obviously, TV cooks are a really big business nowadays with your Gordon Ramsays and Jamie Oliver, but for the 80s and 90s, she was the one there. Really,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
And she's very much very sort of staid and very sort of authoritative BBC. Very BBC.
Forced, but yeah.
Exactly. But there's a wonderful clip on YouTube of her, because she's also a manager of a football club, but she's staggered on the pitch drunk and yelled at the audience, yelled at the crowd, just, come on, then, let's have you. And that's what Julia Child reminded me of most of the film. I was sniggering at Delia Smith, I think, rather than enjoying the film.
It's not a film to go and see unless you've had your dinner first, because I came back and monstered the fridge.
Popcorn just ain't enough for that.
The entire fridge.
Pretty much.
Without even opening it, just straight down.
Straight down.
That's impressive.
Everything looks so tasty. I'm going to have to buy the book. I'm going to have to buy The Mastering the Art of French Cooking.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And then do all the recipes over a year.
I'll have to have a new challenge. 6 months.
Oh, there you go. Come on. You can do it.
No, I don't think so.
One thing I did, because this is a film... this is a film which drags in more, for want of a better phrase, sort of housewives and mothers than I think most films normally do.
Yes, yeah.
Which is no bad thing. It's all good. Get more people going to the cinema. Yeah. But I just realised it's partly the nature of the audience in the cinema I went to see it in. I think also just my own cinematic snobbery. Mm. Because I just thought, at various points, I just thought, this is an audience that doesn't normally go to the cinema.
Yeah.
There's this shot when, after she has her first cooking lesson and isn't chopping onions very well. And then she goes back home, and her husband comes home to find her an enormous pile of onions, and she's chopping them and practicing. Oh, yes. And you're watching it, and you think, she's chopped all the onions, well done. And the people behind me laughed as if it was the funniest thing they've ever seen in their entire life.
I asked him, when I saw that picture.
Yeah, and I just thought, hilarious. Really? If that's the biggest gag you can envisage, then you really need more cinematic experience.
Which I also found very amusing, because the following scene, when she's meant to be acing it, she does it really badly. Anyway, that's just continuity. Terrible. Anyway.
Good, so that's Julie and Julia.
That's Julie and Julia.
And Jed continues in his email. As for District 9, which we raved about a couple of weeks ago, he said, I've heard it's good, but also pretty gory. How does this mature content affect the film? Does it become unnecessarily schlocky, or does it stay intelligent despite the blood and guts?
I'd say it stays intelligent. I wouldn't even say it's all that gory.
I didn't really
but
notice
partly
it.
Partly I'm massively desensitised.
I think it was... I'd say it's slightly gory. And you've got... I know a lot of people have referred back to Peter Jackson's first film, Bad Taste.
Yes.
Because, of course, he's behind this as well.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of an extreme comparison.
A little bit of extreme. I do think, I did feel for the aliens in it when they were being splatted.
And the humans
as well. There is splatting going on.
I think most of the deaths seem to just be literal disintegrations into sort of an explosion of guts, but not in a sort of hugely visceral way, no. But there is an explosion and sort
I think
of blood
it's,
gets scattered.
It's 15 rated rather than 18 rated.
Yes.
But I think also the reason I found it a little bit, probably, it felt gorier than it probably was in a way, is because it's such a well-done film that yeah. you feel for the aliens.
Yes.
In a way that you wouldn't in another film where they're being splattered and you think, oh, it's fine, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I think people are maybe coming away saying it is gorier than it actually is, because they're actually caring for the characters in it, which
yes.
is no bad thing.
Which does, to answer James' point, does say that, does demonstrate that it does stay intelligent throughout the goriness.
Yes.
Because you care about what's happening to the people.
Yeah.
And also, I think when they, I won't say what happened, towards the end, one or two people get killed, and one of the aliens says, I thought we weren't going to kill people. And then, so at least they sort of challenge the question of, but we've killed people, and this is an important thing, rather than just, we're just fighting our way through.
Yeah.
It's always with a purpose.
Mm. With a porpoise. With a pig at one point. The pig weapon, that's hilarious.
Yes.
Wonderful,
yes.
Yeah, very good.
Ooh, good memory.
Which is a slight or maybe definite Half-Life 2 reference for any gamers listening.
Oh, right.
I don't know if it's just a comparison can be drawn or if the filmmakers deliberately did it. I think it's deliberate, but I'll need to see it again to see exactly what. But there's a weapon in the game Half-Life 2 that works just like that.
Gamer, looking forward to seeing that this weekend.
Oh, I really am.
Oh dear.
This
review to follow, listeners. Review to follow.
If you want a summary of mine, Paul's different mindset, this is quite definitive in that Paul says he's going to see Gamer and goes, oh dear, I'm going to go see Gamer and go, yay, because I realise it's going to be rubbish and yet I'll just turn my brain off and then enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'll go and see it, but I don't know yet.
You're a girl, you won't like it.
Yeah. Well, maybe. It might be a love story, deep hidden.
I think it's going to be a love story between a man and a gun.
Oh dear.
It's about as far as the love story goes.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, this is an idea for a new feature we've got, isn't it? Really?
Yes.
Spinning around.
In fact, it was Gamer that called it.
I think it was, actually, wasn't it? That's right. Yeah, that's what. We're in the pub the other night trying to convince my wife, who is less actiony than me, I think it's fair to say.
Yes.
Just shies away from them entirely. And so heard John talk about this film Gamer and said, oh, what's that about then? I can only assume she thought it meant Monopoly, the game, or something like that.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to pitch it to her in ways that she may go and
see
the film.
That might con her into going to see it.
Exactly, yeah.
And I don't think it was really doable with Gamer.
No, probably not.
But it gave us the idea of trying to misdescribe films.
Mm.
Because, I mean, it's happened with me and my parents, for example. If a film comes up that I think they should go and see because it's brilliant, and then I'd have to kind of play up certain aspects.
Yeah.
Or my mum's question often asks, is there any love in it?
Right.
And so you've got to play up the love story
and,
play down the slaughter.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
So, we're trying to think about ways to describe films to sell them to people who wouldn't normally go and see it.
Yeah.
And end up just giving entirely the wrong impression about that film actually is. We've not got a name for this yet.
No, we haven't. So, any ideas for the name of this feature? Because we might make it a regular thing.
Yes. I think I've been referred to as Missold Films.
Yeah. Son of a Pitch, I was going to call it.
I do like that, but it also doesn't quite make sense.
Pitch Slapping.
So, yes. What was the other one I said? Oh, it's got 99 problems with a pitch ain't one.
Nice, I like that. That's quite a good one.
Yeah, it's quite long-winded, though.
Yeah.
Another Take.
Another Take.
That's quite sweet.
You pitch.
Oh dear, it's all gone a bit nasty.
Well, I don't know. So if you want to suggest a title for the feature, something involving takes, pitches, stories, mis-selling things, then tell us.
Well, yes.
Yeah. And if you've got one of your own, then do email us in as well. So,
yes. But then ideally, sort of send it in and then leave a long gap.
Good idea, yeah.
Or else actually just email it in and then wait until we do it.
Yeah.
And then email us in the next week.
Oh, with the answer.
Yes, and we can all hazard a guess.
Good idea.
And then get the
idea.
Answer the next following
good
week.
Good idea. Very good.
Whatever you fancy.
But along the lines of this. Okay, so here's a film for you guys. Here's a film.
Okay.
See if you like it. Okay. This is one of those late 60s, early 70s slasher flicks. Okay. It's quite brutal. Basically, it's one of those tense moments in the film where it's actually set sort of on a sort of recreation site, holiday destination. Dr. Soper has taken a group of school children to this recreation site for the weekend, but one by one they're targeted by one Sidney Boggle and his friend Bernie Lugg, who they mean these women harm. They do, for Sidney is a demented pervert hell-bent on young women after seeing a film called Paradise with his wife Joan Fussy. Sidney targets these women one by one. He picks them out. And woe betide the results if he gets hold of them. At one point, in fact, he does get hold of one called Babs, who is doing some aerobics, I believe it is.
I think I know what it is.
Do you think you know what it is? Do you think you know what it is?
I think it's a film that's part of a big chain of films.
Could be.
Is it Carry On Camping?
It's Carry On Camping! That's right, it's not the slasher horror flick that I was trying to make you believe it was.
It's all so obvious now.
Therein lies the game. So
Babs.
Exactly, that's going to give it away, wouldn't it, really? Yeah. So,
excellent.
So any other takers?
Yes, well, I've got one.
Okay.
Which again, it's another horrifying thriller.
There's a lot of horror thrillers out there.
It's slightly easier that way. This is a bitter, bloodthirsty rivalry between two men. One is the experienced leader, one is a delusional newcomer, sort of young upstart.
Okay.
Both fighting to be the favourite of their ruling overlord, who is rarely seen. The leader's attitude turns his followers against him. Meanwhile, the new arrival has his false illusion shattered. They both end up being cast out into the world alone and are forced to work together to survive being captured by a psychopath, in the process developing a mutual respect for each other. In the end, they both struggle back to their home as partners to great adulation.
Okay, I don't know. I think I'm getting buddy movie.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing if you're making it a horror thing, it's probably going to be a comedy of some sort.
Yes.
So, one's experienced, one's not.
The boss isn't seen.
And the newcomer has false illusions about himself and his role in life.
Can you give us a clue?
You're not going to get it. It was
obvious. No, okay.
The leader is very much old school, and the up-and-coming newcomer is sort of quite futuristic in his approach. I can't think of a better way to describe it.
Can you give us some names, or where it's set, or what they do for a living? They
don't really have jobs as such.
Okay.
They go through long periods of inactivity whenever their ruling leader is around. Ruling leader might be, that's overblowing it by quite a lot. The leader of the picture isn't really the sort of the overall boss. He answers to someone.
Is it Toy Story?
It is indeed Toy Story.
Get in,
Miss Masters.
Bloodthirsty.
Well, yeah, I didn't say it.
I've been captured by a psychopath. That's the kid next door.
Yeah, the kid next door, you see.
Oh,
I see.
It all ties in.
Long periods of inactivity.
I should think actors. No, I should have emphasised that point earlier, possibly.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's why the names would have given it away. Buzz and Woody.
Well, exactly. It would have made it immediately cut to the chase.
Fair point. Wow. Okay. Fair point. Jennifer.
Yeah. I've just made up mine, so this is going to be interesting.
Whereas ours have been crafted over years.
Well, that obviously had a lot of skill in it.
It had about 15 minutes of thought while I was watching Ocean's 13. Yeah. Frankly, be grateful that I didn't get Toy Story and Ocean's 13 confused. Danny Ocean robs Buzzy's casino. Oh, no,
yeah.
Oh, that's a film. Jen, carry on.
Okay, mine is a tense story about a little girl who is plagued by terrors, and after a few months she is kidnapped and taken away from her home by strange creatures. She's taken far away where she is kept hidden and having to wear strange paraphernalia so she goes unnoticed. It's a struggle to get home, but will her warm heart lead her there? It's littered with great special effects and... Yeah, that's what I'll say for now.
Is it Labyrinth?
No.
No, see, that's what I was going to go. I was nearly certain it was Labyrinth.
Oh, no. It's not like Willow or any of those.
You sure it's not Labyrinth?
I'm sure it's not Labyrinth.
Is it Labyrinth?
No.
How about Labyrinth?
No.
Okay.
In Labyrinth, she's not kidnapped anyway.
Isn't she?
No.
I haven't seen it in years.
So she's kidnapped?
She's taken away from her home.
How old is she?
She's unable to speak.
She's unable to speak.
Yes.
That doesn't really
answer
the question.
She's very, very
though.
Young. She can't talk.
Coraline?
No, she can speak.
Oh, yeah.
She's not kidnapped.
Sewed up things, but that's her eyes, not her mouth.
She can't communicate with language, no. She can make noises and stuff.
She's a dog?
No.
Or a cat?
It's a girl.
It's definitely a
little girl.
A girl who can't speak.
Who's plagued by terrors. Strange clothes so that she can go undetected by her keepers.
Any other clues?
It's quite a colourful film.
Okay.
It's got a great cast.
Yeah. What's it called?
It's got amazing special effects. I will go back to that point.
Is it animated?
Yes.
Is it Toy Story?
No.
Is it Toy Story 2?
No.
Is it Labyrinth?
No!
Carry On Camping.
The keepers themselves are, you know, career orientated.
Wizard of Oz? No, that's not. No. They're career orientated.
Career.
As in
Korean
job,
film.
Job based.
Job based orientated.
Not as in North and South. I may just have to give up. I'm sorry to say. You're not willing to, are you?
No, I want. Give me more
Ask
clues.
Ask me some more questions. More
okay.
Okay. When's the film made, roughly?
Film or old film? Oh, it's maybe in the last 10 years.
Okay. Is it a Pixar film?
Yes.
Oh,
Monsters, Inc.?
Yeah.
Ah, no. Played by terrors.
Yes.
No, it's the big thing with the John Goodman thing.
Yes. And she doesn't speak.
And she has to dress up as another monster.
She
doesn't
speak, does she? That's right.
Yeah, she can only say
Oh, yeah, she is dressed up as a... Yes.
And will a warm heart lead her home? In other words, you know, her laughter is what eventually saves her.
See.
Oh, that's far too clever.
That's far, very complicated.
That's not the plot of Labyrinth. Wow.
So there you go. If anyone would like to send in any of your own suggestions, then write us a fake pitch.
Yes.
Flipping it around a bit. And the one that came up in the pub, which was quite nice, was trying to pitch Bridget Jones's Diary to men. And it actually worked pretty well, because I was thinking, come on, convince me then. And it's you know, there's two men, they fight, there's a big fight,
yeah,
there's
big
glass everywhere,
yeah,
a big action scene.
There's a woman eaten by dogs.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
leopard print underwear.
Exactly. Oh, yes. There's near nudity. And yeah, I'm sold actually.
Oh, that? Watch on the weekend. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. So anyway, you can drop us an email, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk. At this stage, we like to hand over to someone else to talk about some films. And given that I got on the UK comedy circuit, I thought I would ask some comedians for their opinions. And this week, it's the turn of Paul B. Edwards.
Okay, I'm here with Mr. Paul B. Edwards.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. A podcaster yourself, indeed.
I am indeed a veteran.
A veteran of the podcast world. Absolutely. Before it was popular. And
it was still in black and white when I
started. It was, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah. And what's your podcast called then?
Punky Radio.
Punky Radio. And that's on iTunes and everything?
And punkyradio.com. Oh,
there you go. Wow.
Very simple.
So films then, is there anything, anything
The only film I've seen recently is Star Trek. And I know it's upset a lot of Star Trek fans because there was a bit too much going on in it. That it wasn't boring.
Right, yeah, it wasn't very true.
Star Trek
films,
was it? It was flashes and crashes and bangs and wallops and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it did that stuff, it did that, because I'm really into Voyager.
Right.
Right, but the only ones I tend to lose it a bit on are the time ones, when they're going back in time and forward in time and all that. So because that was so central to this one, I didn't enjoy it maybe as much as I could. And I also, maybe it's just me, because no one else is really saying about it, but I didn't like the treatment of Chekhov in it.
Okay, yeah. No,
I really didn't like it.
I thought
it was really... God, we can't have a go at anyone of colour, so like we used to in Star Trek. So let's instead have a go at the Russian. And I know that when Star Trek came out to start with, they would take the mickey out of Chekhov, but it was very gently done.
Mm.
And this one, I thought a lot of the subtlety that was in other parts of the film wasn't in how they dealt with Chekhov.
Yeah, no, fair point.
But I did like it. It was good fun.
No, it was a lot of fun. Lot of
I wasn't
fun,
expecting Spock to be sexy. I don't ever want to go into a film where I come out fancying Spock.
Well, who'd have thought he'd get some as well by the end of it? That's cool.
He really got some off me by the end. I was absolutely loving it.
Anything else then for the last few years? Any other?
Well, from the last few years, and I have to say, it's a British classic and all that, and it had its 25th anniversary a few years ago, and then it's been re-released again now with Nail and I.
Oh, yes.
Which is just a beautiful film, and it's just such a lovely thing, and it's one of the most quoted films amongst my mates. And I had the pleasure to meet Richard E. Grant years ago. They were doing a thing at the radio station that we were both guests on this show, and they were doing a thing where they were taking photographs of people's heads, photographs of people's feet, and then they were mixing them all up, and you had to match the head to the feet, and all the little girlies in there all wanted their photograph taken with Richard E. Grant, and he was bored of it and he didn't want to do it. And I said, Richard, I'm sorry to say, I said, not only is With Nail and I my favourite film, it's also my friend Claire's favourite film. And if she's got to see the photograph of me and you, she's going to be furious. He went, let's do it. So I had my photograph taken with Richard E. Grant, but I said, listen, rather than doing just the average pose, can we do it so it looks like you're a fan of mine and you're really pleased to see me and I'm just not really that impressed?
Nice.
He went, this is getting better. So I've got a fantastic Polaroid photograph of Richard E. Grant with his arm around me, shaking my hand with a big smile on his face, and me just looking utterly disrespectful of the man.
Wow, wonderful.
And Claire hated it.
With Nail
and it's
you.
Just a brilliant film, and it's got some of the best lines in it of any film ever.
Yeah.
I can watch it again and again.
Yeah. And another thing, any other films that...
I saw on TV the other night, I'm a fan of really rubbish fantasy films, especially the more B-movie the better. Have you seen Cole the Conqueror?
I have not seen that,
see it. It's that bloke who's Hercules with the funny name.
Yeah.
And it's that girl called Tia something out of Wayne's World. It sounds like a car.
Fiona Uno?
Fiat Uno.
Something like that. Let's call it Fiat Uno. Yeah.
Tia Carrera.
Tia Carrera. Oh, like
Porsche.
Yes. Oh,
like Porsche, yeah. And she's a witch in it, right? Mm. And he's a rubbish peasant bloke with an axe who's been a pirate. And they have to do battle over approximately 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it's great fun.
It does sound like...
It's really... And Ed Temple, out of Temple
Tudor,
yeah.
Okay.
is... I say out of Temple Tudor, the rest of you probably know him as from the Crystal Maze.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
But Ed Temple is a particularly... nasty, horrid, little rubbishy sorcerer bloke in it who survives much longer in the film than I thought he would. I thought he was going to be in there and go, but it's kind of, it's not an all-star cast, it's a they're nearly star cast all the way through it. I recommend Carl the Conqueror for anyone who doesn't want to read a film and come away from the film thinking they've learned something they can tell their posh friends about it. Or if you just want to sit back and zone out and have a laugh, perfect.
So, crap fantasy, that is the way.
Crap fantasy, my friend, is the way forward.
What a genre. Lovely. Thank you, Paul B. Edwards.
Pleasure.
So that was Paul B. Edwards with his thoughts on some films, recorded at Jongleurs Watford just a few short weeks ago. And Paul B. Edwards, he also has a podcast, punkyradio.com. So there you go, you can listen to that. And if you've come here from Punky Radio, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, welcome.
Indeed. There's not much punk here, but there's films.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've listened to the radio before now.
Indeed.
On occasion.
We're aware of punk. True. Quite like some of it.
Yeah.
It's all right. So, one more film on a national release at the minute I did want to mention quickly, which is Adventureland.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is out in cinemas as we speak. And I saw a copy of this on a plane a couple of weeks ago, coming back from America, and because it's been out there a little while, I believe. And I didn't really rate it. I don't want to sort of... prejudice too many views because it may be just it didn't quite lend itself to a 2-inch square screen.
Again, a few films do.
A few films do.
Frankly, I think any film which does lend itself to 2-inch screen
exactly.
isn't probably a very good film.
No, it's more Tetris. Yeah. It just blocks, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's a coming of age film. It's about a couple of kids who work in a theme park called Adventureland, which is a genuine Adventureland.
Okay.
And I think it's New York State. And yeah, it's set. A few years ago, I think 80s or 90s, and it's a coming of age thing. It's them over the summer holidays, and it's them learning to love and grow and party and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all right. It's not bad, but I think it's got a good heart to it. But I just found it feels very overdone territory lately. It feels a bit Juno, and it feels like the Michael Cera films.
Yeah, Superbad,
those sort of things. And yeah, I mean, this one's not quite as gross out as a lot of those, so it's a bit more heart to it. But I think for coming of age films, I would refer people to Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
From I think the early 90s. Right. Richard Linklater, who also did Slacker's a very good film as well.
Oh, okay.
Not Slackers, which is awful.
Right.
But Slackers is just one of, again, your gross out schlock films, rubbish. Slacker is, I think, started by Kevin Smith, is one of the things that got him making movies.
Okay.
And it feels much more slice of life. It's lots of kind of home video footage of just teenagers talking almost to camera or to each other, just sort of really sort of amateur feel to it. But
yeah.
Just them kind of free at the end of school holidays and mm-hmm. what they're going to do and that sort of thing. And it's that's a nice one. But Dazed and Confused is one of my favourites, I think, for that era. Adventureland, all right. Just, you know, the jokes are pretty funny from time to time. But yeah, I feel we'd just been there before, really.
Yeah.
It's got Ryan Reynolds in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all right. And Kristen Stewart from...
Oh, from Twilight.
From Twilight, yes. Indeed.
Oh,
yes.
What,
yeah.
The main...
Yes, Bella, right. Bella from Twilight.
Yes, and she was promising, showing herself to be a good actress, really. And,
okay.
Beyond just the Twilight franchise, so it's good that she's doing that. So, if you've seen Adventureland or other films and want to email us in with opinions, then do so.
Please do.
But that's mine, anyway.
Fair enough. Yeah, we'll just throw in some quick DVD references.
Yeah,
just a couple of films we've seen this week.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say the Ocean's 11, 12, 13 films, just because I've seen them all this week on TV and DVD on a whim. And I haven't, because Ocean's 11 I know very well. Ocean's 12, I think, I'd only seen once or twice, really. And 13, probably once or twice, but more recently. And for a start, Ocean's 11 is now 8 years old.
Is that right?
Eight years old, 2001.
Wow.
It makes me feel old.
No one was alive back then.
I know, it's ridiculous. I think there's probably... I'd say they go in order of release in terms of quality. As in, 11 is far and away the best.
Mm.
12, I remember having mixed thoughts about at the time, because it doesn't have the caper aspect of the first one as much.
Oh. Is that the Fabergé egg, Julia Roberts
yes,
one?
Yes, it's a little bit more scattered.
I can't remember it.
Yeah, it's... There's not, because it's the first one is just one big caper and that's it, and the second one is a few little things, and then the Fabergé egg stuff. The Julia Roberts thing, where they make use of the fact that Tess, played by Julia Roberts, looks exactly like Julia Roberts.
Yeah, funny.
It's utterly cheeky. Pretentious, and yet I really quite like it.
Yeah, I quite like it as well. Yeah. A lot of people didn't at the time, and were. I think when that came on the screen, a lot of critics went, "Oh, for crying out!"
Well,
there.
Yeah, but it's kind of an audience pleaser. Yeah, and when Bruce Willis plays himself, and then sort of says Julia, and then but of course she has no idea who he is, or he's blown away by the fact it's Bruce Willis, and it involves a lot of suspension of disbelief. But I do quite like it, especially when the guy at the end just says, "Oh, you don't look anything like her," which it's obvious, but it kind of works.
It's nice.
And the banter is all still there as well. And the third one, is sort of back to the single big caper, but it's all a bit rushed. It's going to, we've done this, this, and this. Mm. And it's a little bit more lost in itself.
This is Al Pacino again, isn't
he? Yes, who is very good. He's good. And so again, I mean, the cast is all there, the dialogue's all still there, but it doesn't quite hang together as well. But I think they're all still worth watching.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen them for a while, they still hang together.
I haven't. I think I may have to.
I think you should. They are good, and it's. I mean, the characters all play off each other very well, and that's what's consistent throughout the three. And now with the sad demise of Bernie Mac, Steven Soderbergh has said there isn't going to be a fourth one.
Is there not?
No, really? I think they were musing on it, or at least would have been open to it. They said without him, they're just not going to do it.
Really? Wow.
Which is sad, but
it goes
kind
to show
makes
the
sense.
Team effort that goes into making that film, because he's not really. One of the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 probably main guys in it, maybe, I would have thought.
Yeah.
And yet, it's a team effort, isn't it, that film?
And he's still into it. I mean, some of the best bits of the first one come from him. So it's a shame, partly that he's no longer with us, but also there's not going to be a fourth film. Because I think they it would have been slightly milking it, but I think they could have wrung it out in a worthwhile way.
Yeah.
But maybe it's best if they just sort of be Leo. Because the third one I still like. There's still a lot to like there. So I think
they can still do 10 prequels. Well, that's 1 to 10, so that's fine.
Yeah, so the first one's just George Clooney just walking around by himself. Yeah,
just as kids.
Just like scrumping apples.
Exactly, yeah. There's a new film out pretty soon, directed by Steven Soderbergh.
Yes, The Informant.
Informant.
Exclamation mark.
With Matt Damon. I saw the trailer. It looks quite amusing.
It does, because it's based on a true story as well.
Oh, right.
Of a real whistleblower who went to the FBI on, I think it was a food additives company or something about price fixing. And he went there, and he was apparently, I think he still is or was, the biggest whistleblower in corporate history.
Really?
And they were so blown away. They're like, brilliant, we're going to get all this stuff. They kind of overlooked the fact that he was massively corrupt himself.
Yeah.
Or they didn't overlook it, because that all came out in the course of events.
Mm.
So I think he would be heralded as a hero if he hadn't gone to prison for enormous amounts of fraud himself as well, despite...
I just like the fact that the trailer shows this character who's like a whistleblower, but rubbish.
Yes.
The rubbish whistleblower. The worst spy in the world, and loving the fact he's a spy as well, just talking to the microphone, looking at the camera. It's just quite hilarious, really.
Yeah. Matt Damon doing comedy. He was on The Daily Show a couple of nights ago as well, and he came across very well in that. Mm. And I think he's got a natural knack for comedy, as he shows in the Ocean films. And so I think being a leading comedic man, I think, could work.
Yeah, fair play. Mm.
Also saw Daywatch, which I'll throw in very quickly because we're running out of time. But it's a sequel to Nightwatch, which is a sort of Russian vampire film. It is very good. I felt, seeing this for the first time, I felt the same way I felt about Nightwatch the first time, which is it is quite convoluted.
Yeah.
And it warrants a second watching. Because it does. It all ties up. As the film progresses, things become clearer.
Mm.
But it's... worth a second go around just to get all the nuances of it.
It seems to give me the impression that a lot of things are taken for granted that you already understand.
Yeah, without wanting to reopen the sequel debate, this more than most other films, you really have to have seen the first one in order to get to grips with this one.
It's an inventive, I find it a very inventive watch, but it's not background. You can't just put it on and drift off.
But also interesting because it's directed by the same guy who did Wanted. I think Wanted was his first American film. And there's hyperactive car driving sequence in Wanted. There's a very similar bit in Daywatch, which he clearly just sort of transposed into Wanted because he could.
Okay.
So that's worth a watch.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, very good.
I saw on DVD this week, I saw Pulp Fiction for a start, just out of craving, and it's as good as it ever was. Oddly looking slightly dated in points. They're just hairstyles and just little things like that. You think that feels like of our era, and yet you look back and
it's 15 years
it
now.
Is, but still a masterpiece, really. And just the music, great use of music in it. I think that even Tarantino hasn't quite matched in his other films, but really, really good. And I also saw Brassed Off, which is a very different good use of music.
Yes.
but which, if you haven't seen it, I recommend. It's a little British film, sort of in the style of The Full Monty, I suppose. Same sort of background and same sort of style. Very northern. It's about the closing of the pits and this brass band that play on. And great cast. Ewan McGregor, Tara Fitzgerald and
Pete.
Jim Carter and Pete Postlethwaite. And very good, very good. I saw it because I had a craving. We went to... because we went to the last night, The Proms.
Ah, yes.
Last Saturday. And all patriotic, lots of orchestras playing and all that. So I thought, yes, let's go and see some brass band music. I was actually, one thing I was going to mention on this, because it's banter, it's about movies, is that we saw this flyer at Last Night, The Proms. For the next day, they had this thing set up in the Hyde Park.
Oh, yes.
The next day, they had this big festival. They thought, we'll use the stage and broadcast it on the radio. And they had Kylie Minogue. They had... the Sugar Babes. They had quite a big, about
big,
20
big
acts
musical
on there,
names on
20
there.
Sort of acts on there, and buried in the middle, Stellan Skarsgård,
which is a slightly
the film actor,
weird addition. Yes,
a non-musician, Stellan Skarsgård, amongst Kylie and Jason Donovan and the Sugar Babes.
In case the name means nothing to you, he played Orlando Bloom's dad in the Pirates of the Caribbean films.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's famous for his music. Is he in a band?
I think he must have just walked on and gone, "Hi, I'm Stellan Skarsgård, and now Kylie." Okay, thanks, Stellan.
Yeah, and wine.
Worth the flight from Sweden.
he might be in Britain filming something.
An odd choice. Just sort of turn up, fair enough.
Yeah, he might be coming out to promote something.
Quickly learning the recorder to play at the concert. I don't know. Very odd choice.
He might be a one man band.
He might be doing something with Mamma Mia. Was that
because he was in Mamma Mia? Wasn't
he was.
In fact. I think it was an ABBA sort of concert.
The makes more sense.
Which is why he's there,
Although, as anyone who's seen Mamma Mia will tell you, being in the film Mamma Mia doesn't necessarily mean you can sing.
They should have got Pierce Brosnan along.
Oh no.
That's mean.
Everyone in Mamma Mia can hold a tune, even Pierce Brosnan, but I wouldn't want to go and see any of them perform it on stage.
No, I think that's probably best left to the professionals.
Yes.
It's a rather withering review, isn't it? But the stage professionals.
Yeah, the professional singers.
Professional singers.
That's quite incredibly just saying, they're not professional. Meryl Streep,
Nah, rubbish.
Well, Pierce Brosnan is not a professional singer.
No.
He did the
Jimmy
Bond
Walton,
films well.
She's just amateur.
He did the Bond films, but there was never, for a second, a question of him doing the Bond theme, was there, really? There was never, GoldenEye! That's not him. The
Ellen
world is...
Dram.
It's exactly. He's, it's
that?
Not for him.
That was wrong. Oh, well.
To wrap up for this week...
please do.
I think I ought to. Desert Island Flicks. We always like to end on this. We've had a few comments of our previous Desert Island Flicks. Last week's Desert Island Flicks was best film about food or cooking, based on Julie and Julia. And Super Toys has offered his suggestion, Aqua Teen Hunger Force : movie film for theatres. Good title.
Yeah, it's meant to be quite good, but I haven't seen any of it.
No, neither have I, actually. But he said the three main characters are food items, which is a reason to watch it, I think.
Wow.
So that's good to know. And Johan, who says, Desert Island Flicks, I have to agree with Ratatouille, which is what I think you suggested last week. Yes, a finely done film. Patton Oswalt, an interesting casting choice in a Pixar movie due to his pretty dark comedy background, but good nevertheless. So fine suggestions there for Desert Island Flicks. And one thing I'll quickly say on Super Toys, he does say in his email, that delighted he was that he joined up Twitter, and he's on Twitter now, and we're following him, he's following us. So you can do that. You too can follow us on Twitter. Twitter.com/moviebanter.
Yes.
We are there.
Or Paul Carenza.
Or indeed Paul Carenza.
Or Movie Mistakes.
Or Movie Mistakes.
Excuse me.
Jen, do you want to plug your Twitter?
No.
Do you,
You're in the dark ages, aren't you?
You don't even tweet,
do you?
No.
Your opinion doesn't matter.
Actually, I vaguely recall slightly freaking out Super Toys because the way Twitter works is people you follow, you see messages, and if you follow them both, then you see both messages. And he sent you a message about something.
Mm.
And I think I sort of left it a few minutes and you hadn't replied. And I figured, as I'm here, I might as well reply because I knew the answer. And he got slightly disturbed.
He
sent you a message and I replied.
It's rather odd, isn't it?
But such is the way of Twitter. It's
I think
very public
it's
thing.
It's because I generally use my Twitter thing to just try out jokes, as a lot of comedians do.
Yes.
It seems, just try out one-liners. And so he was just questioning a UK reference, I believe it was.
Yes, it was something to do with stamps.
So if you want to see some attempts at jokes, then do follow me on Twitter. And
I'm slightly more film-related.
Yes, as you'd expect. Yes. Exactly. So Desert Island Flicks for this week. Best Patrick Swayze film.
Yeah.
Tribute to the great man.
Mm.
He's done a few good ones. Any thoughts?
I'm going to go first, I think. Put myself out there. I'm going to go for the first film that I really remember him being in,
mm-hmm.
and the most amazing film, is Ghost. Still makes me cry.
Fine movie.
Great cast, obviously. Whoopi Goldberg and Demi Moore. Iconic scenes.
Yes.
The pottery.
The pottery, and also then the final, the kiss. Yeah, beautiful film. Very, very beautiful.
John?
I know what I'm going to go with, but mm-hmm. if I remember rightly, one just occurred to me. He's in Donnie Darko,
wasn't
he?
He was, yeah.
He plays the teacher in Donnie Darko.
Yeah, golf teacher.
Which only just occurred to me. Yeah. But I'm going to go with my original train of thought, which is going to belie my action-loving roots, and also just going slightly off.
I know where you're going for this.
Hazard a guess.
Point Break?
No. Oh, I should do, actually. No, see, I try and go slightly less obvious, but as I'm flicked, yeah. I'm going for Roadhouse.
Roadhouse.
It's a tremendous film.
Wow.
It's a brilliant classic.
I've
rubbish.
Never seen
it.
No,
really,
no,
it's on TV. Seems to be about every 3 months.
Right.
It'll turn up. And yeah, it's him playing the. He's brought in to be the bouncer of a unruly nightclub, who's a karate expert, but also has a heart. And he ends up having to fight an unruly businessman. And it's a brilliantly rubbish film. And yet he's quite good in it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Roadhouse. It's a cult classic. I'll put it that way. But obviously it should be Donnie Darko or Dirty Dancing or any other better film. But
if you want to go for Roadhouse, then you go for Roadhouse. That's allowed because no one else will be. So that's fine. I'm really conflicted because I wanted to go deliberately last because I couldn't decide between Point Break and Ghost and Donnie Darko. And Dirty Dancing. And so now I've got a choice between
all three.
Exactly.
Ghost, but
you see, Donnie Darko, he's brilliant in Donnie Darko, but it's more of a cameo based on his previous stuff, so I'm going to probably dismiss that one for the moment.
Point Break, I think the main reason I didn't pick it is I haven't seen it in a very, very, very
long
time.
No, I haven't either, actually. I'd like to see it again. And it's Catherine Bigelow, isn't it, who directed that?
Yes, it is.
Yes, who recently did The Hurt Locker.
Yeah, that was one of the first 18s I saw, actually.
Very good.
The headmaster of my old school, when we all left, age 13, just rented it out and showed it to us.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. He's retired now.
Yeah, clearly, yeah. He's somewhere.
He knew we were mature enough
spoken
to
of again.
Watch it.
I'm going to go for Dirty Dancing.
Oh, you complete girl.
I am. Because, I mean, are you saying, best
Marriage
Patrick
has
Swayze
changed.
It has. Are we saying best Patrick Swayze film, or are we saying what film was Patrick Swayze best in?
I was thinking more the latter, which is why I went for Roadhouse.
If it's the latter, I'm going for Dirty Dancing.
Okay.
I think Point Break I prefer to watch as a film.
Yes.
But yeah. I think in Dirty Dancing,
it is kind of his definitive.
It's what all the girls wanted to be with him, all the guys wanted to watch a different film. But either way, but the iconic scenes in that are, the dance and the lift.
Yeah.
And no one puts Baby in the corner. Oh, I'm going to watch it now.
Apparently he hated that line.
Really?
Yeah. He hates the fact that that's one that people remember because he didn't want to say it in the first place. Oh, well.
He's also in Dirty Dancing 2, Havana Nights. I've been told, because I put on Twitter a post when he died saying, I don't know what to watch in tribute, Dirty Dancing or Ghost. My wife will probably want to watch Dirty Dancing 2, even though he's not in that. And all the swathe of comments I got saying, he is in that. One comment.
Oh, really?
Got,
one person. Yeah.
Enough.
But enough to correct me.
Probably the one person who saw it in the cinema.
Indeed.
I think that's our lot.
Okay, well, thank you for tuning in.
See, we thought this was going to be quite a short one, and it hasn't, as ever it's expanded.
I know.
But hopefully you enjoyed the film-related bantering.
Do email us any thoughts, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk, particularly your upturned pitches, we'd like to hear those.
Yes.
And any thoughts on anything, really.
So, yeah, just let us know. We'll have a read. So we try and read out email if we don't always get time, but we do read everything, and it's all very much appreciated. Yeah. So in which case, we shall see you next week.
Will do.
Ta-da.
Bye.
Bye.